Hey everybody, it's Nick here from the GrayscaleGorilla.com podcast, where we talk about everything motion design. And today we try to answer the question, can you ever be too old to do motion design for a living? Stems from an article written by Joey from School of Motion, and it really gets into the heart of choosing the right path for your career and knowing that you're on the right path as you get older and different things happen in your life. So this was a really fun conversation we had. We end up talking about some of our favorite toys in our childhood, a bunch of other interesting discussions today. So I hope you stick around and I hope you enjoy this episode of the Grayscale Gorilla podcast. Well, hello, fellas. How are you doing today?
Very well. Thank you very much.
I'm sick.
Oh,
got a cold going around. It's pretty miserable.
What about the brothers? Are they sick too?
Yeah, Danny's pretty much over it. Johnny, I think, is in the same state I am.
Oh, that's miserable.
Guys are just going to be circulating the germs around.
Yeah, well, luckily you can only get it once, but... And then I got to eat up my 3-day weekend with being sick the whole time. So that was wonderful.
That sucks.
Did you watch anything good? Or
I just watched. I actually, you can see behind me, I've got all these bins. I've been organizing Lego bins and watching movies I'm familiar with on Netflix. Because every time I tried to watch something that was too interesting, I would just want to watch the movie. It's like I haven't watched The Shining in years. So I put it on. I was just like staring at it for like 10 minutes. I was like, I can't watch this. I won't get anything done.
It's so too good.
My productivity over the weekend was organizing Legos.
Nice.
And being sick. I watched Zootopia again, which is great. Watched Prometheus for the second time.
Yeah, Prometheus is one of those movies that it's not an awesome movie, but I can watch it. It's one of those movies that you have where if it's on, you'll watch the whole thing.
I gotta say, it's the first time I've seen it since I saw it in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
But me and my friends have spent so many hours picking that movie apart. Like I judge people based on their opinion of Prometheus. Like I am very judgmental when it comes to your people's opinion on Prometheus, because there is no movie in the world that has more plot holes than Prometheus.
Oh, well,
it is ridiculous. I could talk about that for hours and hours and hours.
No, plot holes are ridiculous. And
it's unforgivable. It's a lovely movie, but it
is fantastic, though.
The worst characters and some of the worst writing ever.
No, you just haven't watched enough bad movies, man. You don't have two teen daughters.
No, I agree. The caveat here is like in the genre of big movies that had tons of potential and just fell flat on their face. So that's the category I'm talking about.
You think that Prometheus fell flat on its face?
We cannot spend this entire podcast talking about everything wrong with Prometheus. But
see,
yes,
what I'm doing here, I'm baiting him. I'm baiting him into a Prometheus discussion.
You don't have to bait me. I'm holding back for the sake of the podcast.
I love it.
If we go start our movie podcast.
I think we had this conversation when I first started, maybe, about Prometheus, and I just let go of logic when I watched that movie and just enjoy the art direction. And the CG and everything else. But yeah, there are a lot of holes. What do you think about the new Alien movie that is coming out?
It looks like Prometheus 2. It's making me very sad.
Well, I mean, Blade Runner 2 is coming out soon too. I mean, that's going to be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah. Well, I'm more interested in that one, but like the Covenant, Alien Covenant, like in the trailer, it starts out with, you see a tiny spoiler if you haven't seen the trailer, like it starts out, you see like a little mushroom spore fly into somebody's ear. So right away, we're already continuing to be far away from like the alien mythos and like all those details and everything. It's like, oh, let's add in more weird alien stuff instead of just dealing with the material that we've got.
So what's your favorite alien movie? Not alien, yeah, like as in a complete, like the genre of alien movies, but
in the quadrilogy.
Yeah.
Plus Prometheus. They almost go in order. But I love them all except for Prometheus. But the first one, I've watched the first two so many times.
Yeah.
But the Alien is probably the best. I love Aliens, though. Don't get me wrong. I love the two on two different levels, but I think the Alien's a better movie. And then the third one grew on me. And the fourth one is schlocky, amazing Joss Whedon goodness. The fourth one is, it's almost like watching the crew of the Firefly deal with aliens, because it was written by Joss Whedon.
I don't even remember that one. I remember the one that takes place in like a prison planet.
Yeah, that's the third one.
Okay, so that one was directed by what's his face?
French guy.
Really? I thought
nope. Third one's a French guy.
The fourth one was which one was did the dude from Panic Room do and the Fight Club? No
idea. Didn't he do
one of them? Maybe
yeah.
I'm wrong.
No, yeah, that guy did do one of them, but
yeah.
But Josh Whedon wrote the fourth one, and it's got like the best science fiction-y elements in it, where it's just like there's scientists are experimenting on the aliens, and it's awesome. It's terrible. It's really good in a kind of authentically good way and a authentically bad way. So I love it.
All right. Well, we should before we go down a rabbit hole even further.
Should we just start this over again?
No, I think people like to hear.
What about Freddy versus aliens?
Freddy versus aliens?
Batman
versus
Freddy.
Who would win in a fight between Freddy Krueger and an alien?
Yeah, I don't think aliens have nightmares, so I don't think he has a chance.
Well, wasn't there a weird mashup like that? Like 10 years ago?
Jason versus Freddy.
Jason versus Freddy, Batman versus Predator.
I thought there was
one. They have Alien versus Predator, but the first one's awful.
Oh, Alien versus Predator.
Yeah, that's awful. I think that if you're going to go Jason against Freddy, I just don't see how Jason stands a chance, really, because Freddy is much more cunning. And
he's got better catchphrases.
He's got way better catchphrase, and he's got a cool sweater. He's got a very nice sweater.
Yeah, I do like the sweater.
Jason looks like he's needs a shower.
The fight scene from that movie is pretty entertaining.
That's one of my favorite GIFs of all time, and I have it in my GIF folder. Is two people dressed up as one's dressed up as Freddy, the other one's dressed up as Jason, and I think Freddy is trying to make a jump shot in basketball, like on an outdoor court. And Jason is like denying him and like totally like stuffing him. It's just fantastic. Like, that's what I want to see. I want to see him play one-on-one.
All right. I'll find a link for that so we can put it in the notes.
You mentioned you couldn't watch anything entertaining or too entertaining because you were trying to do like a secondary task. You guys ever work with movies on in the background?
Mm-mm.
Not movies. I at one point back in the day, I was watching all of South Park as I worked, but I have to be working on like very. I often have YouTube videos going, but I have to be doing a mindless task. Like if I need my brain, if I'm modeling, I could probably be watching something. But if I'm doing Espresso or something, and once I start doing like some code, then I have trouble having even music with lyrics on.
Can't do it.
There was a time where I listened to DVD commentary for movies I already have seen before while I was – so in that case, it was a little bit like a podcast, but it was while I was doing a lot of After Effects work back then. I would just put movies on loop and listen to like all five of the different commentary tracks like in a row. And I don't know that I don't think I could do that now, but back then it was really like calming and just like focusing where I just – sat there, but now I don't think I could do it. Even you're right with music, Chris. I get more and more quiet as I work more.
There's actually on Spotify, if you go to like their genre list, there's one called Focus, and like one of the first two stations in that list is actually really good. I like the music, and it's all just kind of ambient. There's no lyrics, and it's just really good background noise. I could do that all day long, but as soon as there's lyrics, I start focusing on them.
Yeah, sometimes it's like, I don't know. There's certain genres I could go to, like instrumental jazz I could do, or like somehow Afrobeat has been my work music lately. Just like that rhythm, the same rhythm, just kind of floats through and I just kind of nod my head and get work done. Chad, are you quiet or music?
I'm music all day, man. All day. All day.
Are you blasting the punk rock over there while
you're working? Yeah, all day, man. You know me. I can't work without music. It's just like, I just feel, I don't know what it is. Like, I feel almost like something's wrong if there's not music going. So one of the things that always bugs me is if I'm in the middle of doing something and I get to the end of my playlist or I get to the end of the album or something I'm playing and it just stops. I hate having to go into my music app and like find something else to listen to. So I try to build playlists and listen to radio stations based on my favorite artists, and lyrics don't bother me at all. Like, I think it to me, It helps me get into a space where I'm able to kind of just let that play and tune. I'm not tuning it out. I'm still listening, but the amplitude and the fast pace of the music that I listen to, it's almost like coffee, and it just keeps me like energized and like going and just kind of gets me amped up.
Yeah. It's hit or miss for me. Maybe we should share some playlists, Jen. Absolutely. Are they Spotify?
I switched over from Spotify to Google Music so that I could get free YouTube Red. So I've been doing that pretty, and I like it actually better than Spotify in terms of its radio and its ability to kind of see what I'm listening to and pick artists that, because that was the thing with me, because I have very specific kind of weird taste that Spotify would really have a hard time finding things that were close to what I liked. And I think Google did that better for me. I don't know why. Maybe the algorithm or whatever is just different.
Yeah. I still miss RDO. That was my go-to. I love that thing. And then it shut down. Well, what are we talking about today? I mean, we just barely got through an intro. I love how we just talk in circles sometimes. We just go down. That's not even circles. It's like down a path, you know? It's just let the rip it up. But I'm here to pull us back. I'm here to say, what are we talking? We got a really cool article that was posted, I want to say as early as, was it yesterday? 22 hours ago.
All right, we're on the ball this time.
That is that's bleeding edge.
Well, look at that. Joey from School of Motion posted this really cool article about, it's an interesting article. It's an interesting read about, it's called Too Old for MoGraph, .. And it goes over, you know, basically a question that Joey had, which I think a lot of people have in this industry, which is, where are all the old people doing motion graphics? His Too Long Did Not Read at the bottom. It says, and we'll link this up in the show notes if you guys want to read this. He says, what is an aging MoGrapher to do when their lifestyle goals don't mesh with the realities of working in this industry anymore? So it's a little bit about, you know, once you get to that creative director position or you've been working in the industry for many years, all of a sudden you might have other goals as far as family or as far as travel or as far as, you know, maybe not working 60 hours a week like many of us do in that industry. What do you do? And it was more of a just kind of a question and got a lot of really thoughtful responses, tons of like huge paragraphs of comments from people all over the industry kind of explaining what that is. And I figured maybe we could talk a little bit about just our experience in this kind of idea. And I don't know. I mean, is there an age limit to becoming a motion graphics artist, a motion designer, a MoGrapher? I don't even know what to call them these days. Motion. What do you call?
We came up with a new one last time. What was the new term we coined last time?
Oh, a hacker something. Design motion hacker? Keyframe hacker?
Motion hacker? I think it was motion hacker.
Motion design. That's even a relatively new term.
Yeah. What do you call it? Well, actually, this is a good joke setup. What do you call a 65-year-old motion motionographer?
I don't know, because they don't exist yet.
So what do you think about all this?
I think those are two different topics, really. I think there's the topic of when is the lifestyle, when do you no longer want the motion design lifestyle, either as a freelancer or as a staffer? I think that's one area that you could talk about. And then there's the whole other subject of where are all the, what was the age? I forget. We're all the older
40, I think they say
40 plus
40 is the magic number here.
He mentions 45, 50, 65. You know, what's your plan to make it to 65 is kind of the high number.
God, you know, okay. Well, it's a really new industry. So you got to take that into account when you're thinking about that, because you've got a bunch of people that are, you know, maybe if they started when I did, they're reaching their 40s just now. So I think in 10 years, this won't even be a question. There's going to be people already in their 40s and 50s working alongside of you, working alongside of the 20 somethings at studios, freelancers, whatever. It's just not even going to be an issue. it's just that we haven't gotten there yet. It's just time hasn't caught up to it. The bigger question I think the person is asking after reading the article is more about how long can I live this lifestyle? And is it's not about, is there going to be older people doing motion design? There absolutely will be. The question becomes, can you work these kind of hours? Can you do this kind of work? Can you have a family? Can you achieve balance? And I don't want to, I mean, yes, you can. I think you can. You just have to be willing to do what it takes to make that happen. It's not something that that's going to come easy in terms of achieving that sort of balance. And yeah, you might be hitting your late 30s and you're working 60-hour weeks and you're not really getting, you're not getting bonuses. You're not getting a lot of fulfillment from the work. You're going to, like all Americans in every job sector, going to hit that period of your career. It doesn't matter if it's motion design or if you're working, I don't know, at some office. You're going to hit that point where you're going to say, what am I doing? Am I moving myself forward? Am I going to be happy doing the rest of my life? See, these are not questions that I think are unique to just motion design.
Yeah, I could see that. There's a sentence in here I wanted to share that I think gets to the big part of it, at least for me, which is Joey says, I'm also curious if any of you have had that, oh shit, I'm at the top of the wrong mountain moment, where you actually do open your own studio or become the thing you've always wanted, only to realize that now you just want to make a decent living, play with your kids, and go hiking on the weekends. And I think that question, like you said, Chad, is a question that people ask in almost every industry. And it is about age in a certain way, but it's mostly about plans that you have when you're 20 are different than plans that you have when you're 30 that are different than plans when you're 50. And through almost any field, especially one with a lot of, you know, with a lot of hours attached to it, you know, you have to, you know, maybe the problem is in many other fields, you have the old guard to look up to and say, how did they navigate this path? And we don't really have that. We Right. don't really have that. That story of the 70-year-old motion graphics artist that we could look up to and say, oh, this is how they did this stuff.
Well, there is a certain amount of reality to the fear of, can we do this when we're older? Because the hours often associated with our line of work are pretty long, and you're not home a lot, and there isn't a lot of security. These are things that I think a lot of people, fewer now than maybe before, used to have. So the guy that works at the office gets to go home at 5:30 normally every day and, you know, go watch his kids play soccer or do whatever and go hiking on the weekends. Now, the motion designer is a bit different because we're at the whim of the client. We have to, in the service industry, there's a certain amount of just on call, I'll call it, you know, ness involved with that, where you have to be able to make changes and blah, blah, blah. So I think that, you know, it is a real concern. I think that you can overcome that by making good decisions in your 30s. And if you make good decisions in your 30s, you'll be okay. And when I say good decisions, I mean, like, take a look at the company you work for. Are they going to support you when you say, I want to start to have kids, or I want to start to spend less time at the office? Or is it just a grindhouse where you're just like constantly, you know, pushing stuff in and out? And start to think about setting yourself up at a place that maybe aligns with your lifestyle goals. There are companies out there that value that and value your time to be able to decompress and re-energize. And your 30s are the time. I used to tell the guys that work for me, like, your 20s are the time to, you know, just bust ass and like do everything that you can to make really killer work and work the crazy hours and do anything that they ask you. Then your 30s are a time to hone and get really good at your craft, but also start thinking about that next step in your life, whether it's being able to take hikes, have kids, get married, whatever it is that you're into and that you want to do more of instead, or maybe you want to be the owner of a company. And that's the time when you have to start putting the pieces in place to set yourself up for that. Yeah, now I'm ranting, but
Chris,
I was afraid of that.
What do you think of this? You always come at it from another angle, which I like. What did you think about what Joey has to say?
I'm pretty much agreeing with everything Chad has to say. Like, I wasn't in the industry the same way most other people are. Like, I didn't do much in the way the freelance route. Like, I've always been very picky about my freelance, and I worked a kind of full-time job pretty quickly, where I had very reasonable hours and all that. So, you know, it was more of it was not typical of that. But I will say, running the Chicago Motion Graphics Group, you know, we've been running this group for getting on like 9 years now. So all the, you know, upper 20 somethings are turning into upper 30 somethings. So, you know, 5 years from now, half that crew is going to be hitting the 40 year mark. So, you know, it's a mix of everybody, but yeah, it is just a young industry. So, you know, 5-10 years from now, that's going to be a very different question.
Are you seeing any trends, Chris, in these groups? Cause you really do talk and see a lot of these different people from different industries, or at least from our industry at different ages. Are you seeing any trends as they made that transition in the last 9 years of what people are doing?
I don't know. I think it just feels like what you'd expect. I think like there's a lot of people who are like, they move into full-time positions because they want something more stable. You have other people who are, you know, becoming the technical directors or the creative directors at their various studios. We have a number of people who are starting their own studios and moving away and starting to do that stuff some more. And I mean, I'm sure there's people who are even potentially getting out of the industry and they'll just fade away from the group. And, you know, you might not necessarily notice all the time when, you know, because people will show up at one meetup, not another one. So 6 months goes by and then you don't realize that they never came back again.
Right.
So that's possible as well. But I think it's just a very natural kind of flow. Like, there's always an influx of some new people and everybody's kind of moving on with a career where they're still kicking ass doing freelance every day and jumping around. So it's a full mix of everything right now. But I mean, just like I said, as a simple fact, like, this group is 8 or 9 years old. So.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. Like, time doesn't stop. Everybody gets older, you know, like, that's just part of life, you know. When I started in the 3D industry, I had that same exact feeling where I was like, I didn't see any 40-year-old people doing 3D or 50-year-old people doing 3D. And so you get this idea in your head where you're like, you don't think about it because the industry is young. You think in your head, oh my God, is it just that when you get to a certain age, you can't do it anymore? You're not cool anymore. You somehow lose that ability to sense what the design trends are happening. And that's all just, you know, a bunch of bullshit. If you're a designer and interested in design and you don't, just become complacent and just fall off completely, then you'll continue to do what you're doing today, hopefully at a better quality and faster rate. And the idea, I guess, overall is to, as you get older, do more, but work less. And that's really kind of your hope, is that if you've been in the motion design industry throughout your 20s and your 30s, that by the time you reach your 40s, you're hopefully being able to do it for more money because you have more experience. You're faster at it because you've been doing it for a decade. So the idea, hopefully, is that you will be able to achieve some of those life balance goals just by the pure fact that you've been doing it so long. When they ask you to do something, you can be like, oh yeah, I've done that a million times. I'll just bang that out. But yeah, it's scary. Like you said, Nick, there's really no one you can look to and say, well, the guy next to me has been here for 20 years and he's happy. So I guess maybe there is hope for me. And there isn't a lot of that at studios or even freelance. So it is scary.
Maybe it's worth looking at how some other industries are doing it. I don't have a great example off the top of my head, but I'm thinking photographers or traditional, you know, illustrators or artists or something like that in another industry that is advertising based, like even, you know, working at a advertising agency, kind of seeing what those paths are.
Graphic designers.
graphic designers is a great example. And maybe it's worth learning, you know, what they do, because I have a feeling that this question is it's been asked by in a lot of different industries, but I think in particular it's the ones that are really client driven and high hour rate, you know, like high hours worked, where a lot of this is coming from. So, and a high passion when you're younger of like, I want to figure this out. I'm going to go work, you know, so many hours to like learn all this stuff. And as you get older, priorities change, right? So maybe it's worth looking at stories from similar industries, but industries that have been around for longer. So I don't know. I'm gonna look into that. What happens to like the Mad Men crew as they go, and then you know as they age. So
one of the misconceptions I've noticed throughout my career is that everybody just assumes a path for everybody in a motion design shop. They just assume like, oh, you're gonna go from motion designer to junior creative director or associate creative director, whatever you want to call it, to creative director. And there are a lot of people out there that have no interest in being a creative director, nor should they, because it's just not in their DNA. So it's when you're staffed somewhere and they immediately put you on this track that's not really right for you, that's a sign that you should either speak up or maybe find a place that is willing to listen to you and what you think your track should be and not put you on a track and make you conform to something that maybe you're not. But yeah, it's everybody's going to hit that point in their life where their priorities, like you said, Nick, are going to change, and you're going to have to start making decisions about your life based on how you want to live. Do you want to, is it more important to get your name on the credits of some killer main title or motion design piece, or is it more important for you to be there to help your kid do their homework? You know, like there's going to come a time when you're going to have to make that decision. And yeah, I mean, it's just a part of life. And yeah.
Yeah. I think it's about I mean, it comes back to some of the themes. I guess we have themes now since we've been doing this podcast for a while, but themes that we keep coming back to, which is, you know, being self-aware of where you want to be and going in that direction. I think if you rely on your company, if you rely on what they think your path should be to guide you, that you'll probably end up disappointed. Simply in a way too. I mean, a lot of this comes in Joey's article and his language, which is language that I'm definitely familiar with, which is when I was young, I just wanted to learn how to do this stuff. I wanted to spend all day doing it. And I was able to, but the path that the studio will give you is actually to remove you from that process. Mm-hmm. It's a huge problem.
Mistake.
It's a huge, and this is in every industry, but in many times you're going to get so good at your job that they're going to want you to go lead other people that are newer and younger and want to go work those hours. And in some cases that transition happens just in time where you want to remove yourself from the day-to-day like super hustle. And then now you're more in a management position. But many of us never got into this stuff to go be a manager of somebody else or go be even a creative director of other people. A lot of us just don't have those skills or are interested in that skill. But that's, like you said, Chad, the go-to path. And when those bells started ringing for me, when people said, oh, well, Nick's been here this long, he's obviously going to step into this position and this position, I was like, wait, I don't think I want to do that, right? So it was a little bit about me being self-aware of where I did want to go and how I did want to spend my time, and then making a decision of, I don't think I should jump into that because of my goals of where I was at the time. So I think it comes to self-awareness, understanding. I mean, Joey's asking the right questions, right? Where, how do you do this? How do we transition? What are our goals? But then it's also about understanding that you're ultimately in charge and that nobody's going to make the right decision for you, unfortunately, as much as I'd like to.
I think it's just important. And it's like you were saying, like, you know, you jump into this game maybe when you're in your early 20s, and then you can have a plan of what you want to do, but blindly following even your own plan could be a bad thing. Exactly. So like, you know, so like a couple years later, 5 years later, it's like, wait, okay, how far have I come? Where am I going? Is that still where I want to go? And I think it's really easy to be like, to get like a goal in mind and just blindly work your way towards it. And that's how you find yourself on the wrong mountain, is because you don't like reassess before a different peak branches off. So,
well, you just got to be open to the journey and like, okay, well, you know, you can't just say, well, I'm already on this path. I've already put 3 years on this path. I'm sticking to it. That's a bad idea.
It's the sunken cost fallacy. Never do that.
Yeah. And that I had an idea for a point that I wanted to make based on what Nick said, but now I can't remember what it was. What was the last thing you said, Nick? It's going to bug me because it was.
Back to Joey Singh, just about how this is in many industries, but it's up to you ultimately.
Right. Okay. That's what the track I wanted. I'm really, and I've read articles that support this. I think companies make this mistake all the time. They just assume that when they have a very effective employee, that they need to then advance that employee and like make them do what they take them off of the box, when essentially they were bringing the most value on the box. And I've seen this happen to many people in my career where they are at a studio for such a long time and they're so valuable, either as an animator, 3D artist, designer, motion designer, whatever you want to call them. And they get so good that, like you said, the company's like, well, they've been here long enough. It's time for them to be a creative director. And what blows my mind is that you're essentially taking someone that was bringing you so much value and so much great work and everything was going just fine. And then the need, or this, like, whatever you want to call it, desire to promote, or I don't even know what, but came from a place not of the person saying, I'm done with this. I need to start leading people. I don't want to do this anymore. Didn't come from that. It would come from the studio saying, well, time to push that person up the ladder. And by doing that, you leave this gigantic void, because you had someone that was doing such a killer job, and now you have a bunch of people that can't do that killer job, and you've got a person who is frustrated, that artist that you moved up, because they've never had to do that before, and they can't be on the box to make it happen. Then they end up hovering over some other artist and saying, just do it like this, and here, give me the mouse, you know? And it's just bad all the way around. Like,
it helps nobody.
It helps nobody, dude. And I've seen so many studios bring people like push them off the box when, without asking them that crucial question, do you want to be off the box? Yeah. And, you know, like if I was running, let's say, a company that made pens, and I had somebody on the floor that was the best person at assembling the pen. And I mean, this person could assemble 30 pens in a minute. And all of a sudden, I'm like, that person's assembled enough pens. They've shown enough gumption. Let's move them up to manager. And now they're completely lost in this new role because they don't know what a manager is. And now we've got somebody else on the floor that can only do two pens in a minute. And you've just screwed yourself. And you made everybody unhappy. Because the guy making the new pens is not getting managed, because the guy that was making 30 pens in a minute can't manage them because he never learned how to be a manager. And so it's this, like, I see so many companies go through that just because they don't even understand what a manager is or what a creative director should be. And it's super frustrating to watch good artists get sidelined or sent on this phony path where they're, you know, just not happy. And I don't know. Anyway,
no, it's being discussed too. I know, Basecamp, which is in Chicago, actually their office, they write really good books about kind of company culture and all this stuff. One of them's called Rework. I forget if it's actually, I don't know if it's in this book or if it's in their next one, which is called Remote, which is about remote working, which is what we do here at Grayscale Gorilla. So I try to read enough about that stuff. But anyway, they have this hiring concept, which is like they're hiring you for that job. And they're like, there really isn't a path to like being manager here. There isn't really a path to like growing out of this job. We want you to come in and be the best at this for as long as you can and want to. And they actually go find those people.
Isn't that like the most, that is so nobody does that. Like that,
right?
That sounds, I bet a lot of people listening are like, I want to work for a company like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've all, I don't know, Chris, have you been, did they ever ask you to do stuff that was like outside of your, you know, skill set at your last gig?
I was fond of saying no to many things. Like, oh, do you want to go learn how to run the printer? No,
I don't believe it. that's so Chris. Right now.
I was not there to do any of the other stuff. I wanted to do 3D. So anytime they tried to pull me out of 3D, I pretty much said no.
Well, when you have you had the leverage there, Chris. Not a lot of people, I think, have that kind of leverage because, you know, you were so good at what you did and they knew the problems that they would have finding someone else as good as you to do the things that you did, that, you know, if it were someone else that said, no, I don't want to figure out your email, I'm not going to help you, they might have said, okay, well, that's a little check on your review and we might fire you in a year because you're not very helpful. You had that leverage of being good. And like, I think that's another important topic that we can kind of like shoot off on, which is knowing when you have the leverage to say no, mm-hmm. and being able to have enough confidence in your own abilities to do that, to do what you did and be like, no, sorry, man, you want me to do 3D, 2D editing, color grading and direct and creative direct and come up with the concepts? No, sorry. You don't pay me for 10 jobs. You pay me for one. And that's what you'll get.
Yeah, I think that's an important part, which is I think young people too have this yes to anything, which I think it's a good trait to have really early on to just go like, yep, let me help, let me try that. I will do my best. I'll do my best. But I think it is that middle ground, like you said, Chad, this 30-ish age where you have to start to go, what do I want to be doing? What am I best at? And what if I say no to certain things, I could actually say yes to more things I do want to do and help the company in a way that I want to, but then still say no to the things and have time for my kids or whatever it is, right? So I think it was a shift in my head to go to a place that I've looked up to, especially at a big studio that I looked up to ever since I, you know, started researching where to eventually work. I ended up working at one of my like most favorite places, right? And so I'm surrounded by this. I'm just in this like yes, 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 yes mode. I did as much as I could and helped as many times as I could. And I think that transition from that kind of like yes to everything, like I didn't have that Chris mentality up front of like, no, I don't want to do that. I had this like, whatever you say, like I don't want to tick you off. I might lose this job. In that transition to understanding that I was good at certain things and that I was bad at certain things, right? I think we all learned that I wasn't great at making storyboards, but like as we figured all that stuff out together as the company did, as I did, it was much more clear on my path of what I was good at, what I was bad at. So I don't know if there's like anything actionable there, but I feel it. Like I feel this, the feeling in this article, I not only feel myself, I've not only felt myself, but I see it in many, many people's decision-making as they go forward. I have friends that decided to start their own studio because of these kind of questions. I have friends that decided to go take a creative director job at a big place in Chicago so that they could actually free up a little bit more of their time, which they wanted to do more family stuff. I have friends that left the industry. It is a personal thing. I mean, I think that's why this is such an interesting topic, is it's so personal. It is so specific to each person to look at themselves, look at others that are similar in but like 10 years later and see what their life is. I think that to me has been a real hack, is to always look down the road at somebody that is kind of doing what I think I want to do and really look at their day to day and look at their job and look at their, are they happy? Like go buy them a coffee, right? If they're down.
I do want to just clarify on mine. The place I'm referring to that I worked at, it wasn't just like a motion graphics place. So this wasn't the some requests I would get would be more like, hey, help with the website or learn the printers. So these things were a lot more tangential, like in a major way. It wasn't like, hey, like, you know, like, can you clean this up in Photoshop? Where he'd be like, okay, that's up my, you know, that's in my wheelhouse. So, and I just knew the way things were, that if you did that thing a little bit, that's your job now. And I could see that very clearly. And there's other people that worked, that started after I did, who were kind of like super gung-ho, like, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll do that. And it got to the point where they were getting called on by different people to do these tasks, and their original job was starting to suffer, where they couldn't be there sitting behind Photoshop or CAD or whatever it is they're supposed to be doing, and actually doing that job, because they're off running the printer, or they're helping in the wood shop, or they're doing these other tangential things.
They think that they're helping, but in actuality, those types of individuals at companies hurt themselves and they hurt the company in the long run, in my opinion, because what happens then is, like, you get this person who's like, yeah, I'll help with the website. Okay. Now that person's the website person, and that person only wanted to help. They didn't want to become the website person. They had no interest in websites. They just wanted to help. But now, whether they like it or not, they're the expert. And from that day forward, they might be seen as the person to go to for any rando issue, which then clouds their standing in the company, because they're no longer an expert. They're just a rando person that likes to help. And sometimes being a little bit, not abrasive, but standing your ground like you did and being like, no, man, that's not what I do, you can earn the respect of your employer and also kind of solidify what they should come to you for, which is helpful to an industry, to a company, because then they know, they're like, okay, I know exactly who to go to when we need to do this graphic, this 3D graphic thing. And it's hard for people that are to make that transition in their 20s, being the person at a studio that could fire you at any moment, to the person that says no. But at some point, you do have to do that, not for only for yourself, but for the company. So they know that, you know, you're dedicated to this thing and that's what you want to do. But yeah, I mean, getting back to what you were saying about the lifestyle thing, it's kind of parallels my life almost perfectly, going from a creative director at a pretty fairly premier motion design company and coming to work at Grayscale Gorilla. I just had this idea of a lifestyle that I wanted, and I couldn't get it doing it where I was doing it. And even in the city of Chicago, me living in the burbs, like, I wanted a different life for me and my family. And this opportunity came up, and it's enough. It's in the part, I found myself as I got older in the industry being more interested in 3D than in advertising, and more interested in the craft that I had spent my lifetime building than the shit I was selling. And so when a fork in the road came in terms of the company that I was working for wanting to be more involved in selling things and not necessarily the craft, I chose the craft, and I came to work at Grayscale Gorilla, where all I do now is help people make their craft better. And it's super fulfilling, and not everybody's going to have that opportunity, but you will get to that point. And for me, it came a little bit later than most, where you are not forced, but you want to make a decision that is not based on how much money am I making and how many credits am I getting on. It's based on, am I a good husband? Am I a good father? Am I a good, am I doing the right things for my life? Am I going to wake up one day and be like, what the hell did I spend my whole 30s doing? So yeah, I'm happy to be here, is what I'm saying.
We're glad to have you, Chad. No, this is good. If you guys have any feedback for something like this, definitely check out the article and comment. There's a ton of great comments, like I said, down here. And also on the podcast, if you're listening on YouTube or on iTunes or anywhere else, head on back to the blog. You could drop a comment in there or on YouTube and start a discussion about this as well. If you guys have run into this issue and have any advice for all of us, really. I mean, I think this is not going away, obviously. And these kind of discussions, you know, we should all have more of these discussions. And at any moment, if you can ever take a step back and say, am I on the right? Am I going in the right direction? Am I doing more of the stuff that I like to do and less of the stuff I hate to do? Am I contributing what I am good at? And am I learning the stuff that I want to learn? You know, those are all just incredible questions at any part of your career. And yeah, this is good. So thanks to Joey for posting that stuff and getting the discussion going. So let's, what else we got here today? What else we got here? We got a couple things going on at Grayscale Gorilla. We have a new tutorial I just put out called How to Turn Your Old Computers into a Render Farm Using Team Render. Got a lot of, you know, talking to a lot of artists and a lot of people around at like NAB and meetups. I was surprised on how many people didn't know that Team Render is built into Cinema 4D, and also built into, if you have the studio version of Cinema 4D, you actually get an unlimited amount of Team Render nodes. So any old computer that you have sitting around, and this goes for those of you who are working at an office as well, that might have old computers or have computers in the corner that are for freelancers that are not being used, you could actually go install Team Render and really quickly add all that computing power to your local version of Cinema 4D. So if that sounds interesting, check out that tutorial. It's a really short 15-minute tutorial on how to quickly set it up.
And that's like for that's distributed rendering, not just sending frames out.
Yeah, so if you use it with a still frame, I should say this only works for physical and standard render, the built-in renderers. But if
and
you,
Arnold.
And Arnold, but you need a node though, right?
Yeah, you'll have to have a license on the other machines.
So some other renderers, you're going to have other licenses and other kind of complexity. But for free, those of you who are using physical and standard can go install this. And what's really cool is on still renders, it actually does distributed rendering as well, which it breaks each still render into buckets, and each computer is in charge of a certain amount of buckets, and it just goes, and really it speeds up so much. Now there's some lag time between sending all the files to all the machines. It's why I always recommend go Ethernet on any of these as much as possible. But I show you in the video how to do it, and it saves my butt, because on the physical render stuff, some of these frames can take, you know, 5, 10, 20 minutes. And if you could cut that time in half with some old machines you just, you know, fire up Cinema with, go check that out. So that tutorial is out. We launched H3i Link a week ago, and that went really well. We got so much great feedback out there. It was really cool to see the artists out there using H3i Link. I think it was last week we asked you guys to use the tag HDRI Link in Instagram if you can, when you post anything using it. And that lets us kind of see all of them. So we've been actually promoting a few of those through Twitter. It's been really fun seeing people like Beeple use it, which is really cool. Seeing some of our friends pick it up and so far so good. So nice work, guys. It was really cool to get that technology out there. What did you guys see as far as Link this week?
I just been constantly monitoring Instagram and Twitter for that tag and looking at the cool renders people do. It's awesome.
It's been cool.
Yeah, just lots of renders, and
it's really
all the people behind the scenes helping out with all the tech support and all that too. So
yeah, exactly.
Everybody who had any installation troubles or download issues or anything, we got all those sorted out real quick and out again. So
that's awesome. Yeah, thank you guys for checking it out. And again, if you're using third-party rendering, check out H3i Link. We haven't really made anything for specifically for third-party renderers yet, and we know a lot of you guys are experimenting with different renders. We wanted to make something that could be used in almost any third-party render, not make you decide, like, I have to go Octane, I have to go Arnold, I have to go Redshift. So check it out. Let's see what else we got here. What else? Oh, Chris has a Ask GSG. That'll be Wednesday at 1 p.m. Central.
Yep, 7 p.m. GMT.
Oh, nice. We got right in the middle of the season here, Chris has been answering. That's what you're doing.
Answering.
Chris has been answering your Cinema 4D questions, and very cool. So, Chad, what's going on in Renderland?
The render wars continue.
Diggity diggity diggity. Render wars.
Yeah, I mean, I've been like kind of diving into the Redshift alpha, getting back into that, trying to provide good feedback and be a good alpha tester for them. That render is GPU render, in case you're wondering, and it's very, very nice and fully featured. Have not heard anything more about the Arnold GPU render other than that post that we talked about last week. Yeah, so not too much going on. I think a lot of people are, you know, a little fed up right now with Octane. I've been hearing a little bit of rumblings about people frustrated with the development team and the development process or the lack thereof regarding promises that were made in Octane 3 that haven't been fully realized when Octane 4 is already starting to sort of be announced. And so people are a little frustrated there, rightly so, I think. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think there's a lot of people out there that are wanting to know what is going to happen, how everything's going to shake out. And one thing that I will ask, though, that people think about is just one thing, like when you're looking at renderers, I'm just going to go on a soapbox for just 2 minutes. I promise this won't be long. Don't just think about the speed. And obviously speed is really, really important. You know, otherwise you wouldn't be able to get stuff done. But I will ask that, you know, if you're looking, one thing that whenever I talk about a different renderer, the first thing anybody does is say, well, how fast is it compared to Octane? Well, you know, every renderer is different. Every renderer is going to have things that it's going to be faster or slower at, depending on how the renderer is built. And what the question you really need to ask is what are the features like? Are they good features? Is it solid? Is it built by developers that care and release updates frequently? That's really what makes a good renderer. I mean, they're all, like I said in all my other talks, eventually all of them will reach a speed parity, which they won't be that far away from each other in terms of speed. And then you're going to be like, well, who's putting out the most updates and who's got the most features? So those are things that I want everybody to think about, not necessarily just speed. So anyway, off my soapbox now. Getting off.
Chris, anything in the news catching your attention?
No.
You've been playing with your Lego all
Yeah, it's
all,
been
all
it's been a Lego weekend.
I played with Legos too, dude. It's been Legos here too, and Chris has really been inspiring me to up my Lego game in terms of how many I should own.
Yeah, and Chad keeps sending me links to Lego things he finds online now.
It's fun. I like it. And something I can do with the kids too. They have fun and we watch a movie and we'll just, the little hack I'm sure you already know about, you take a bed sheet and you just like lay it out in the floor, and then you just dump all your Legos in the middle of the floor on top of the bed sheet, and then you just do Legos, and then when you're ready to clean up, all you do is pick up the sheet and like pour it into your bin.
Oh, that's so great. That's so great. Similar related thing that came up. I'm going to use that for sure, the sheet. We have a lot of nieces and nephews come over to our house, and it's not quite a kid. Oh, that thing's cool.
That's my latest bot.
That thing's awesome.
I'm really into making these mechs. I think it's a lot of fun.
It's not quite a kid-friendly house, but we do have kind of a toy cupboard that we've been building with, you know, my old Hot Wheels and here's the mistake that we made. We put board games in the toy cupboard. And what young kids do with board games is they open up the board game, they dump it all on the floor, and then they don't play the board game at all. They just like, you know, make a mess. And so this weekend was actually after that party. I was like, all right, we need to do something here. We need better toys, obviously, but we also need to move the board games up into where an adult could reach them. So I packaged everything up, figured out where all the cards went in every box, and put all the board games up. But then I got all my old Hot Wheels, got like 200 old Hot Wheels, put them in a box, put about 50 pieces of that orange track in a box.
Oh, those are the best.
And I got one of those. There's two pieces. There's one's a clamp that you could clamp to anything to kind of start the ramp.
Yep.
And then the other one is a battery powered flinger that the cars go through and it kind of flings it out. So that's in one Tupperware, kind of big Tupperware container. And then we have another one that is full of the big size Lego. Is that Duplo?
Duplo, yeah.
Duplo,
so it's Duplo / Cars Lego kind of stuff. So I don't know where the brands all fit in, but the kids are loving that stuff. But It just reminded me of that whole thing because I'm going to get the sheet out next time because there's Lego. Lego ends up everywhere.
Oh, it's, man. That's awesome. The worst pain in the world is stepping on a single piece in your bare feet. Oh,
yep.
That's one of those. That's one of those jokes I've heard 100 times and I never experienced it until maybe last year. And I was like, this is the worst pain. Like a little 1x1 brown, you know, Lego, like imprinted. Ah, no good. No good.
Yeah. The thing that I've been doing lately is like trying to convince my daughters to let me pillage their complete sets that they've built. Like they have like a scorpion that they made with all these joints. And I'm like, oh my God, look at all the joints on that scorpion. I could use those joints. And they're like, I'm like, can I take this apart, you know, and use it for parts? And they're like, no way. I'm like, ah.
Do you leave Legos together? Do you leave the kits together when you're finished with them usually? Like, do you guys have
they will. They'll build them and then they'll leave them. And then usually about a year, it's fair game. After a year, they can kind of like get disassembled and put into the pile.
Chris, do you keep your stuff? I know you had some things at our last office that were all built and finished, but how many do you have a bunch of things finished at home right now?
I just don't have the disassemble space to have a bunch of things built. And you're not gonna be able to see it too well. I'm not gonna put too much detail into it, but over there you can see the big castle.
Oh my gosh.
That's the main thing that I've got built, but I don't have that much space to keep things. So I don't know. It was always kind of like, you know, especially growing up as a kid, like you'd have, you know, I used to have in the basement, we built a wooden table over the pool table because no one ever used the pool table. So we had the pool table's worth of space to just build a Lego town. And that would stay there for years, being like sections would be demolished and rebuilt and whatnot.
Zoning laws being put into play.
I mean, I've got like an old robot that's probably like 20 years old in a bin, still put together, but then other things exist only for, you know, a couple months or something. You never know.
Yeah, we put a whole table in the basement with two chairs that we got from IKEA, and that's like all Lego. And then we have, and in the thought that like, oh, we'll give them a place to do Lego, and then they never use it. They do Lego. They want to do Lego while they watch a movie. So it all.
So you just need a TV down there.
Yeah. Well, we do. That's the. But it's not facing. It's not. I don't have it quite right.
Yeah.
But and then, you know, I've been getting into it more. So that we just bust out the sheet and do it. It's kind of a Friday night thing. Pizza, movie, Lego.
That's a good night.
Yeah, I've always liked the kits that we could build 50 things. You know, a lot of them seem like now they're kind of designed to build one or two things. Do they still have the big just?
Oh, you mean just blocks? Like the block pile?
Yeah, mine had like here's a wheel or not a wheelbarrow. That's maybe a bad example. Here's a car you could build with these blocks, or here's a house you could build with these blocks, or here's a castle. Like it was 50 things in a big book that you could build with one big box. Do they still even sell that, or is it all like? Yeah. Kits at this point.
No, you just have the random kits, but for the most part, you're buying like a Star Wars spaceship or something. But you know, you get three of those, and now you build whatever the heck you want.
I think they have them. They're called Creator, Creator something.
Yeah, it's like a specific genre.
Yeah, like it's like Creator Studio or Creator thing, where they have like three things that you could build on the front, and it varies, you know, based on it could be like a dog and a cat and a bird or something.
I think when I realized that you could buy bulk stuff at that. Whatever age I was, 11, 12, and you could just go buy bulk. Like the Hot Wheels stuff, I realized I could just buy bulk orange track, just a bunch of them. And I can make my track go like around the house. I was like, this is what I want to do. I don't want a car to do a loop in a circle. And I want it to go around the kitchen, the whole island, the whole deal. And then I was bought bulk stuff. And then I would buy bulk slot car track too. I didn't know you could buy bulk slot
car. Oh man, slot cars, dude.
So you can go, you can get eight straightaways, you can get a bunch of turns, you can get the crisscross track, you could just buy a loop if you wanted. And I had mine so long I had to put a second power supply in mine just to get,
get more enough juice.
That was over on the other side.
Oh man, I would have loved coming over to your house. That would have been a blast.
Dude, that stuff is fun. I really love seeing people's like Hot Wheel stuff or Lego stuff, or even just like model train stuff where it like goes around the yard and through the shed to the garage, like up a story in the house. Like that stuff is so cool.
It is cool.
Some of those videos go on so long. I have no idea if they filmed it all that day or if they've been filming it for 3 years. Like, okay, we got all the shed built. Now let's go into the house. Let's, you know, it's all edited, right?
Sections.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, how do you end up with that much track? But, you know, I guess if I had some enough to go around the kitchen when I was 12, I mean, I guess this is what happens when you're an adult. You just go buy as many toys as you want.
And you realize you have money to spend now. Like before you had your $5 allowance, you're trying to stretch. It's like, all right, I'm going to have to save up for a couple months to get one set. Now you're like, wait, I could just buy all of it right now.
Just get all of it.
Dude, the Hot Wheels track, though, like almost every time you do Hot Wheels with that orange track, it ends with a fight with using those tracks as swords. And like, if you slap somebody with one of those things,
it's like a belt. Yeah.
It hurts like crazy, dude. Like, that's like a serious, like, we would fight and like, oh man, it would get ugly. You'd like, you know, you'd extend them and see how far you could get before they'd break off and try to hit each other.
Dude.
Ours always ended up at the end of the stairs to see if you could get a car to go all the way down the stairs, stay on the track, and then of course you jump it and try to knock stuff off shelves.
That was the thing.
Like, the wooden floor at the base.
How big of a gap could you make and like make the jump and all that? Slot cars are like also pretty fun, where it was like you would just try to, you know, I remember when we used to play with the slot cars, just like doing everything we could to make, like, we would get cooking oil and like try to grease the tracks so that you could spin out more. And like, it was crazy.
Well, I'll link up a slow-mo Hot Wheels movie that I made while I was working at Digital Kitchen. We had access to a slow motion camera, or a high speed camera, I should say, which at the time they didn't have this built in your iPhone like we do now. But over the weekend they said, if anybody wants to use a slow-mo camera, just come on in and use it. So all weekend I filmed throwing water balloons at friends and all this stuff. And one of them was the biggest Hot Wheels crash that I could like choreograph. And I tried to get it on slow-mo film, or not film, but slow-mo video. And it's there. It's still on the internet. And I'm going to link to it in the show notes. And it's basically about 100 Hot Wheels cars, I think 50 or 60 on both sides. I built two groups of ramps, and then I built a big shelf out of not particle board, but foam core. So I glued all the ramps to foam core, set up all the cars, and then when we were rolling, I would lift both sides, or I had a friend lift the other one. We'd lift both sides of the foam core to like start the ramp. Then they would go down two more sections of track to get speed. And then like 100 cars would just all crash in the middle of the frame. And that's what we captured.
And it
turned out really, really fun, especially when we decided it looked a little boring. So we stuffed flour in all the little crevices of the cars and then knocked out most of it. Just kind of knocked out the obvious stuff and brushed them off. But there was still like little bits of flour and little dust in the corners. Yeah, lightly breaded. So as they hit, all these little dust pieces would like come flying off of it. And back when slow mo was kind of a novelty, it was pretty fun. I'm gonna link that up
The time when everybody was filming each other getting slapped in the face?
Yeah, that was a pretty good one.
Yeah,
we DK did a couple of those. I wasn't there for the first one, but the second one was really slapping people. I mean, that was really kind of the hardest part about it was we were all kind of close enough to where you had to tell them, please hit me really hard because I only want to do this once. And if you did it softly, it didn't look good anyway, because the whole cool part of it was like the rubber of your face just totally, like your nose rippling, bouncing back and forth five times. And we ended up with a pretty good little reel. I'm going to try to find that too. Slapping.
I made a GIF of a few people getting slapped.
There we go.
I found that footage once.
All right. Let's put that in the show notes. Might be about time we wrap up today. Let's see. We got all the notes here. And hey, those of you still listening, we really appreciate it. This podcast has been really fun for us. And you know, just seeing all the comments in iTunes and seeing all the comments on YouTube has been really cool. So first of all, if you guys have any comments about what we talked about, want to contribute to the community, please come say hi. We're always trying to answer any questions in the comments. And second, if you have a topic, if you have a question, you know, like Joey had over on that site. You know, drop it in the comments. We're actually collecting some topics for the show that we want to talk about. And a lot of them are great. They're you know, based on career path and a lot of the stuff that we end up talking about anyway. It's always hard to do a Cinema 4D tutorial over a podcast anyway. So these kind of topics are important.
Audio tutorials.
Yeah, there you go. So thanks again for listening, everybody. Really appreciate it. And don't forget, all the past episodes just popped up on iTunes. So if you want to go back and hear me rant back in around 2012 to 2014 era about some of these concepts, about, you know, how I got some of the jobs I did and how I made some of the decisions I did over my career, feel free to go back. Let me know what you think about those old episodes. With that, I think we'll push the rest till next week. What do you say, guys?
Sounds good.
Chris Schmidt, thank you for being here. Chad Ashley, thank you so much.
Yep.
And we'll see you guys in another podcast really soon.
Bye
everybody.
Bye. See ya.